Well, thank you, Wayne. When you were saying all those nice things, I happened to catch Catherine's eye, and she was cracking up. She knows me really well. Who are you talking about? Anyway, last week, Wayne spoke on peace, or shalom, and that happened to be his daughter's middle name, which I thought was very cool. But I'm not going to be outdone, because today I'm speaking on joy, and that happens to be my daughter's middle name. This is how we choose our speakers here. And in fact, I intend to one-up Wayne because I've asked Melissa to come up and share just a little bit about what joy, being named Joy, means to her.
To caveat this a little bit.
Okay. There we go. I do feel the need to caveat this just a little bit. I love my name. I've always loved my name. I'm going to say I hate my name. I don't hate my name, just for the record. Thank you. Okay. So this is definitely drawn from personal experience, but not that part. Okay. My name is Joy. I don't know what my parents were thinking. Why would you name a child Joy? For one day, for day one, nothing but trouble has come from my name. I know, that sounds ridiculous. Why would a simple, beautiful name like Joy be so troublesome? Where shall we start? When I was a small child, I was a quiet, reserved child. Being a child can be scary at times. Big, tall adults walk right up to you and start talking out of the blue. What's your name? They ask. Really? I'd rather pretend you weren't talking to me at all. But I shyly reply, my name is Joy. The unsolicited conversation continues. That's a sweet name. You're so lucky to have a name like Joy. And on they go, as I slowly melt into the nearest wall. You must love the name Joy. Why? Why must I? My school years were no fun either. We moved a lot. Every new school, every new year, what's your name? Here we go again. With a sigh, I meekly reply, my name is Joy. Joy, 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 happy, happy, joy, joy. Billy, stop. But aren't you just happy all the time? Smile, they'd say to me. You can't be sad. Your name is Joy. It's just my name. It has nothing to do with my mood. My name is Joy, I say, when introduced to the boy across the room in geometry class. What a beautiful name. It matches your beautiful eyes. And that beautiful pimple on the nose and the awkward gait and the tugging at my beautiful clothes that I'm uncomfortable wearing and my inability to put together a coherent string of words that make up words. Beautiful? Oh, Joy. One day, not too long ago, a man sought me out at a church Christmas party. It was a crowded room, and I really didn't want to be there. This man was a man that I knew from a distance. He was a respected, older, wiser, more mature father figure type, but effectively a stranger. This stranger, he gave me a Christmas present. He said to me, I see you, Joy. He used my name. The name that I despised so much. The name that draws attention to me when I don't want it, highlights the awkwardness that I already feel, and seems to give people the wrong idea about me. He went on. I see how you wish you were invisible, so you can hide your fear, loneliness, sadness. You wish you could float through life, wispy, ethereal, present, without actually being present, because being present means you might have to feel something, and feeling something might be scary. It might hurt. I maintain my composure, looking him straight in the eye. And inside, I'm dumbfounded. Jaw on the floor, dumbfounded. I mean, how does he know that? How could he possibly see that? See me? He continues, Joy, you're right. Feeling is scary and it might hurt. In fact, it will hurt sometimes. But other times, Most of the time, feeling is a good thing. Fear becomes courage. Loneliness becomes connection, and sadness becomes joy. Not happiness, but joy. Deep contentment that seeps into every corner of who you are, and then it begins to show on your face. That is your true beauty. You may not see it, but others do. I do. And with that, he quietly walked away. What am I supposed to do with that? What does that even mean? My head was spinning. My heart was pounding. Over the next several days, I pondered his words. I tear every word apart, put them back together over and over again. I see you, Joy. Of course, this has to happen during the season in the days leading up to the day when heaven and nature sing. Heaven and nature sing at Christmas time. Because of the words of a stranger, nothing magical happened. I'm still me, but I'll never be the same. I'm still afraid, but I face it with courage. I'm still lonely, but I seek connection. And sometimes I'm still sad, but I am also content. I no longer hate my name. It's always with me. The day that man saw me, he gave me a present. That memory always makes me think of what I say to others around Christmas, of the presents I can give. Today, ask me, what is your name? And I will boldly reply, I am Joy.
Thank you. Take yours, not mine. You know, it's funny. Sometimes sermons just come together. Hey, Sean, no biggie. Sometimes sermons just come together for me, but this one I struggled with a little bit. And it went through several rewrites. And I think part of the problem was I think the premise is kind of flawed. Because what I should be standing here is giving you five keys to finding joy. But really, that's backwards. Because joy is, to me, a result of finding God and being connected with him. So as I was struggling, I finally came up with what I'm going to share. And I was feeling pretty good about it. And then my husband and I went to a German-Jewish delicatessen, if one can have one such things, but there is one. And he got a peach lemonade. And he took off the top, which I have here. And inside it says, consuming this product may cause joy. So, if this sermon doesn't do it for you, there is a German-Jewish delicatessen. Get the peach lemonade, and you've got it. So there. You know, we tend to think of joy as happy. We think of them as synonyms, but they're really not. There's quite a difference. Joy is more a certain feeling of pleasure and delight, but it's the source of pleasure and delight, an inward gladness. And note the focus on inward. Joy springs from deep within, whereas happiness, on the other hand, is more akin to good fortune, good luck, good circumstances, prosperity, things like that. So joy bubbles up from deep within, and happiness kind of bounces off the surface. Now, we like them both, but there's an important difference. Dallas Willard has this to say, faith, hope, love, joy, and peace are the Magnificent Five. Inseparable from one another, they support spiritual and psychological health. Love, joy, and peace are the order that our otherwise chaotic emotions are to take on. Joy is not the mere sensation of pleasure. It is a pervasive, constant, and unending sense of well-being. So where does joy come from? Note in Dallas Willard's definition, love precedes joy. When we're abiding in God as his beloved, joy is a natural byproduct. But if joy is a natural byproduct of our being beloved by God, why don't we always feel it? If nothing can separate us from the love of God, what can stifle the byproduct of that unquenchable love? Well, I have a theory. Joy can get blocked if we live backwards or contrary to how we were designed to live. If we live outside in rather than inside out, letting life in the world affect us rather than us affecting life in the world around us. See, from the very beginning, we were supposed to have an effect on our surroundings. Let's take a look at Genesis 1, 26 to 28. God spoke, "Let us make human beings in our image. Make them reflecting our nature so they can be responsible for the fish in the sea, the birds in the air, the cattle, and yes, earth itself, and every animal that moves on the face of the earth." God created human beings. He created them godlike, reflecting God's nature. He created them male and female, and he blessed them. Prosper, reproduce, fill the earth, take charge. Be responsible for the fish in the sea, the birds in the air, for every living thing that moves on the face of the earth. Well, that's how it was supposed to be. But somehow we've got things kind of topsy-turvy, haven't we? Instead of being image bearers, being connected to God and reflecting his character, we've imprinted on the world around us, reflecting its brokenness. We've reversed things, letting our surroundings and circumstances rule us. Sorry, I'm missing a page here. That could be bad. Okay, we're back. So, I have this thing here, and I'm going to butcher what it's called, but it's a Matryoshka doll. Thank you. It's that. And it's a Russian nesting doll, you know, where it's got all these pieces and parts, and it keeps undoing and undoing and undoing and undoing and undoing. And finally, you come up with this. It's a child's toy, right? But it's a child's toy with an awful lot of wisdom to it, because this is how we started. This is what we were meant to be. This is our authentic self. But as time and the brokenness around us, and more specifically, the broken people around us, have acted in their broken way, it's imprinted on us. So we develop a layer of defense. And it happens again and again and again and again. So we have all of these layers. Now, we feel safe and secure on the outside to some extent, right? But our true selves aren't fooled, not a bit. And we're filled with longings that go unmet. And we're faced with the impossible dream of filling those longings with things and with people. But things and people aren't what we long for. What does fill this place? Belonging. Belonging. Belonging is being in the proper situation and being attached or bound to something or someone by birth, by allegiance, or by dependency. And this is exactly what God had in mind for us. Listen to a few verses. This one's from Leviticus 20, 26. "Thus, you are to be holy to me, for I am the Lord, and I am holy, and I have set you apart from the people to be mine." Isaiah 43, 1. "But now, thus saith the Lord." And whenever it says, "thus saith the Lord," that's kind of a big deal, okay? "So, thus saith the Lord, your creator, O Jacob, and he who formed you, O Israel, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine." Psalm 103. "Know that the Lord himself is God. It is he who made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture." And John 17:9. "I ask on their behalf. I do not ask on behalf of the world, but of those whom you have given me, for they are yours. So where does that leave us? We were created to be in relationship to God, to live as his beloved, in complete dependence and surrender on him. But that sort of goes against our grain, doesn't it? We don't really like being dependent. We like our independence. We love doing things our own way. But the stark truth of the matter is that it is actually independence that goes against our grain, at least the grain that we were created with. And as long as we live in independence from God, or in harsher terms, in defiance of him, our longings will remain unmet. And we will continue to seek imposters to fill them. But we have a choice, the choice, really. Mimi Dixon writes this: when God breaks in, we have a choice. Embrace or reject, believe or doubt. Either we abandon ourselves to God's path, the steps of which are only revealed as each foot is lifted in obedience, or we cling to our own path with the illusion of certainty. Deuteronomy 30, 15 to 20 says this: see, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God and walk in obedience to him and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. But if your heart turns away and you are not obedient, and if you are drawn away to bow to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. This day, I call the heavens and earth as witness against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life. Choose life so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God, listen to his voice, and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, I used to really dislike this verse. It seemed pretty harsh. It sounded to me like God was threatening to wipe out the Israelites if they strayed even just a little bit. But after sitting with it for a while, because I tend to do that, if there's a verse that really grates against me, I try to spend time in it to figure out why. In sitting with this verse, I came to a different thought entirely. It seemed like the passage was expressing God's desire, his deep longing for us. He longs for his children to live the way they were created to live. He longed for us to be his beloved and to live the way he designed us. He longs for you to live the way you were created to live. You want fulfillment? You want joy? That comes from being in relationship to God, to live into being his beloved. That's the abundant life he promises, not a Mercedes, not a big house, not a healthy bank account. Life is the beloved, living a life that we were created to live. And it's surprisingly simple, really. Love the Lord, listen to his voice, do what he asks. In other words, abide in him. Let's look at John chapter 15, and this is what Jesus has to say to us. I am the real vine. My Father is the vine dresser. He removes any of my branches which are not bearing fruit, and he prunes every branch that does bear fruit to increase its yield. Now, you've already been pruned by my words. You must grow on growing in me, and I will grow in you. For just as the branch cannot bear fruit unless it shares the life of the vine, so you can produce nothing unless you go on growing in me. I am the vine itself, and you are the branches. It is the one who shares my life and whose life I share who proves fruitful. For the plain fact is this: apart from me, you can do nothing at all. And the one who does not share my life is like a branch that is broken off and withers away. It becomes like the dry sticks that are picked up and used for firewood. But if you live your life in me and my words live in your heart, you can ask for whatever you like and it will come true for you. This is how my Father will be glorified, in your becoming fruitful and becoming my disciples. I have loved you just as the Father has loved me. You must go on living in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will live in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and live in his love. I have told you this so that, and get this, so that you can share my joy and that your joy may be complete. There it is, the recipe for joy. I have told you this so my joy may be in you and your joy may be made complete. God's motivation for everything he tells us is that we live as we were meant to live. And joy is a byproduct of that, not the great imposter happiness, but a deep abiding joy that's unshakable and bubbles up from deep within. So how do we get joy? From abiding in Christ. And how do we do that? Here's another Dallas Willard quote. The greatest need you and I have, the greatest need of collective humanity, is renovation of the heart. That spiritual place within us from which outlook, choices, and actions come has been formed by a world away from God. Now it must be transformed. Indeed, the only hope of humanity lies in the fact that as our spiritual dimension has been formed, so it can also be transformed. Transformation, changing from what doesn't work to what does. It's like wearing a pair of shoes that you spent way too much money on, that are hideously uncomfortable, and they cause you anguish and pain, but you keep wearing them because you have them, and because they look cool, and because you spent too much money on them. Well, if you don't mind my paraphrasing Johnny Cochran, if the shoe don't fit, dump it. The life of independence from God does not fit, no matter how hard we try to pretend that it does. There's always going to be the longing of the soul that cries out to be filled. That little shaking, shaking, shaking deep within us that says, I have a longing. No matter how many relationships, no matter how many things we have that we try to fit into that hole, the gaping hole just keeps getting bigger. And trying to fill it robs us of the joy. And even more so, it's exhausting. Jesus has some really important things to say on this subject. Familiar words that we've heard a million times. But they say that repetition is the best teacher. So I'm going to say it again, because I think there's solid gold here, something that can almost guarantee that you can experience love, joy, peace, all of the fruits of the Spirit. Are you tired, worn out, burnt out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me, work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me. You'll learn to live freely and lightly. Now, doesn't that sound good? Let's tear these verses apart and see what they might mean to us as we wind down 2019 and begin a new decade. And may I invite you to consider living just a little bit differently in the coming year and see what the byproduct might be. So first, are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Jesus asks a simple question. Are you tired? You're exhausted? You're sick of trying to do everything right so that maybe God will like you just a little bit better? How are you doing? This question deserves an honest answer. Take stock of where you actually are in terms of your relationship with God Now, if I ask any of you, you know, what do you think your relationship with God ought to be? Oh, yeah, God's first in my life, right? I mean, that's what I would say. I mean, I get up here and I preach about it. So it better be what I say. But you know what? Honestly, maybe you're not sure if you're all in. Maybe you're not sure that dependence on God and surrendering your independence is a good idea at all. Maybe you're disappointed in him. Maybe you've had a need that you don't feel he's met. Maybe you don't understand him and he feels honestly pretty far away. Well, these are things that can make this whole Christianity pretty difficult and exhausting, really. So the first thing, take stock of where you are. It's such an important question to ask. And God loves it. He loves our honesty. Next, come to him. If you have questions or hesitations, bring them to him. He's not going to be mad at you. He loves it. Ask him to reveal himself as he is, as he really is, apart from the theologies that you've learned and the expectations that you have, the misconceptions that you may have learned from others or that you may have come apart on yourself. God wants to reveal himself to you. And that is one of the major themes of the Bible. So let him do so. Shelve all those preconceived notions. Stop trying to conjure up something. Just relax and let him do it. Get away with him and recover your life. I love this one. I am a huge fan of retreat. Why? Because I'm too busy. There's too much going on in my life. And if I don't schedule time away, I suffocate under work, laundry, and the other gazillion things that cry for my attention. There's a mountainous to-do list in my life, and if I don't take time away from it, I'll die. Retreating helps my brain to reset. So I try to get away for at least a long unscripted weekend a couple times each year. And this is different from a family vacation because we all know, don't we, that sometimes our family vacations are more trouble than our normal lives. I mean, take camping for instance, and don't get me started. This is why I don't camp. All the normal things you have to do with none of the things that make them easier. But some of you love camping, so have at it. Sometimes I find it helpful to focus on something that is pretty much untouched by mankind. I take 5 minutes and look at a flower. Take 10 minutes and look at the sunrise. Watch the progression as the sun comes in. Look at the sunset. Go out to the desert. Look at the vastness of it. And you know, we have this thing, I think it's over that direction. It's called the ocean. Just go there. Watch the waves break. Let the rhythm sink into your soul. Ask God, what can I learn about you from this, from looking at a flower or the sunrise or the sunset or the ocean or a tree? See what comes to mind, and you might be really surprised. You don't have time, you say? Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And yes, you do. The next is take a real rest. Sabbath. Take time apart. You know, it's so funny. I hear people all the time say, well, you know, I keep all the Ten Commandments. And I always want to say, yeah, when was the last Sabbath you took? And they'll all say, oh, it's last Sunday. I went to church. Well, okay, most of us in this room have some sort of leadership or volunteer thing that we do on Sundays. And we all know Sunday is not a Sabbath. Sunday is work. So set apart a day, or at least part of a day, once a week, where you stop busying. For most of us here, as I say, it's not going to be Sunday morning. And I'm not saying don't volunteer. Please don't stop volunteering. And I'm not saying don't come to church. Please come to church. But don't count that as your Sabbath rest. I mean, a lot of us need time to recover from Sunday mornings, honestly. So for the next month or so, I challenge you. Cut apart 3 hours of your week. We'll start there. I'm not going to say do a whole day yet. I mean, maybe you can, and that's great. You'll be happy. But take 3 hours where you set aside time to do nothing with God. Put aside your shoulds. Just kick back and relax. You can spend time with your family. But if you do, spend time with your family. Not doing things, not discussing hard topics, but listen to them. Find out what makes them tick. Take a walk together or just enjoy being alone. Learn what it feels like to rest, relax, meander, linger, ponder. Those are words that don't come into our busy life very often, do they? So the next one is walk with him and work with him. Develop an awareness of God's presence in your daily life. One thing I know for sure, he's there. One thing I don't know for sure, are we? Get in the habit of noticing his presence. I have a simple thing that I do, and I try to do it several times a day, and it's a little breath prayer where I breathe in and I think God is present, and I breathe out, all is well. My life is in good hands. God is here. So try it with me. Breathe in. God is present. All is well. You do that 2 or 3 times, just as a reminder. Nobody's going to know you're doing it. You've got to breathe anyway. But this is just a little way of focusing your attention on the reality that God is, and he is God with you, Emmanuel. In reality, there is no truer truth than that. Next, learn the unforced rhythms of grace. Spiritual disciplines. Now, that sounds like something we have to do, doesn't it? But I want you to climb over that misconception. Because spiritual disciplines are things that keep us in God's presence. Jesus did them. And I think it was Dallas Willard who said, we want to do the things that Jesus did. But we don't want to do the things that Jesus did that enabled him to do the things that he did. Chew on that for a while. What did Jesus do? Well, among other things, he spent time in prayer. He spent time away from everything to commune with the Father. He immersed himself in Scripture. He developed an awareness of God's presence with him, in everything he did. Now, maybe you'll say, but my life's really busy. Okay, I think Jesus' life was pretty busy too. Just saying. Spiritual disciplines, and there are many, are the very stuff of life. And they are solid, solid gold. Next, keep company with him. Stick to Jesus like glue. You know, that's what a disciple does. An apprentice, you think of an apprentice in the feudal days where they would just hang with the master carpenter or the master whoever. They would watch how he does things. They would see how he thinks, how he approaches life. That's what we need to do. When you read a gospel story, ask yourself, what is Jesus like? How does he approach life? What's important to him? What is he like to be with? I mean, sometimes he's sarcastic. He's got humor. Sometimes he's direct or sharp with people, for sure, but always he's loving, kind, and longing for those he interacts with to turn towards God. And when you find yourself distracted, just turn back. It's that easy. And last, learn to live freely and lightly. Unencumber. Learn to live life simply. Pare down your schedule, your possessions, your responsibilities. We've just moved from a really larger house to a really smaller house that's about a third of the size of the other one, yeah, which means all our stuff wasn't going to fit. And I can't tell you how freeing it is to go through and get rid of stuff. I, as sort of a master acquisitor, I made up that word. Don't look at me funny. It's my husband. Well, anyway, that was something that I did. I acquired. But now I divest, and I'm finding it very freeing. And the Salvation Army loves me. They know me by name. But whatever you do, be present in what you're doing. Live your life on purpose. Learn to be where you are. When you're at work, work. When you're with your kids, really be with them. Don't be planning what you're going to do next. That moment is never going to happen again. When you're talking with your spouse or with your friend, listen to them. Be present with them. And when you're with God, be with God. Live mindfully. Avoid distractions in multitasking. And don't allow distractions to rob you of life. A long time ago on a hill overlooking Bethlehem, the angels proclaimed, "I bring you good news of great joy. Joy of the coming Messiah, of Jesus, the babe born in a manger." But that was just the beginning. Some 33 years later, as Jesus completed the work that he was sent to do, he speaks of the great joy he brought is being made complete in us when we abide in him. Let's listen to John 15, 9 to 11 again. "As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now, remain in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made complete." Abiding in Christ is the most natural thing in the world. And at the intersection of the vine and the branch, we find our true selves. From the union with Christ, the fruits of the Spirit, the fruit of the true vine, spring forth in unending supply. Unquenchable joy, a joy that stands no matter what the circumstance, it will be yours. Now, as the worship team comes up, we're about to sing one of my favorite songs. And it speaks of what we've talked about this morning. Resting our weary souls in God, giving back the lives he's given us, and in return, receiving a fuller, deeper life. Yielding and surrendering, a song of hope and trust, and recognizing one truth. My life is not my own. It belongs to God.